Okay, you got, looks like you got the recording started, Joe.
Yes.
Okay. Now to get everything brought back up here. Okay, this meeting's presentation is about hotspots. I'm sure everyone is somewhat familiar with what they are. Some might not know exactly what they do. They're an interesting piece of equipment that can be cheap or can be expensive. Hotspots, different types. What does it do, set up, and should you build one or buy one? Types are many options. MMDVM boards are the most common that you can attach them to a Raspberry Pi board, whether it's a Raspberry Pi 3, Pi 0, Pi 2. There's a lot of options depending on what you want to spend and what you want to do with it. Jumbo Spot SkyBridge is one from that's available, OpenSpot, and a lot of other ones. They can get fairly expensive if you buy them from manufacturers, or they can be fairly inexpensive. In short, a hotspot is just another tool at our disposal to increase our communications ability. They give you the ability to connect to different talk groups, whether it's DMR, Yaesu System Fusion, their Wires X rooms, P25, all the different modes. Some of the older hotspots were only available for DMR and Yaesu, the System Fusion and some D-Star, but now there's a lot of options with them. When you first setting up a hotspot, always check. I know everyone here is, I think everyone's from Colorado, so the Colorado Council of Amateur Radio Clubs has some posted some guidelines for people to use because of the increase in growth for the number of people using hotspots. They decided to put out some frequencies to use for your hotspot. You can see here, you can go to the ccarc.net and read their guidelines and stuff there. A lot of information available. Let me get into, anyone have any questions yet about the simplex frequencies or getting in before we get into setting up a Pi Star or hotspot? Doesn't look like it. When you first set up a hotspot, whether it's new or when you buy a pre-built one, they generally come pre-configured with parameters you send them. And the only thing you'll have to do is set up your internet connection if you're using Wi-Fi, or if it's has the ability to connect through Ethernet connection into your internet service. When you log in for the first time, if you power the hotspot on, most of them should be set for an automatic access point connection to where you can take any device that's Wi-Fi enabled, search for Wi-Fi connection. It'll bring up the hotspot Wi-Fi. It's usually Pi Star will be the name listed. Or you can plug it into an Ethernet connection to your internet to log in. If you do the Ethernet connection, you'll have to find the IP address for that the Pi Star is connected to through your network. Type that into your search bar or your internet browser bar, and it'll bring up your digital dashboard. The first time you log into it, if they did not send you any login credentials for it, the default username is Pi Star, and the default password is usually Raspberry. They are Linux-based in the operating system, so they're fairly user-friendly and open-source software, so it's generally find some good information online about them also. When you first, after you log in, you'll want to click on the configuration tab in the top right corner. That'll bring up the configuration menu. The first thing to do, if you want plan on using a Wi-Fi connection, scroll down to the bottom of the window and you'll see the wireless configuration. If you click on configure Wi-Fi, it'll bring up a list of all the Wi-Fi connections available. Select the one, your Wi-Fi network. Enter the passkey or password. They refer to it as the PSK or passkey. Enter your password and save and connect. When you save and connect, it will reboot the system and connect to the Wi-Fi, and then you'll have to go back in and log back in through the IP address issued to it. A good choice if you do use the Wi-Fi setting is figure out with your network how to set it as a static IP address instead of one that'll change every time you power the hotspot on. If you have it set as a static IP address, it'll always be the same and only one number to remember instead of always having to search for it. Once you have that set up, the general configuration is where you enter your call sign, your DMR ID, everything else you need. Simplex frequency, your latitude, longitude. One thing a lot of people get confused on is where it asks for town. A lot of people just enter, say, Loveland and not think of anything else. With the Brandmeister and that, they ask that you put the town and your grid location. It helps with their mapping program. If it has the grid location in there, it'll use that instead of your call sign and helps calculate where everyone is from, transmitting from, where hotspots are for better coordination and tracking down if there's any type of interference. Your country, type in United States. Website URL is optional if you have a website that you use, or if you want to link it back to a club website or personal website, you can enter that or leave it at default, or a lot of people just enter it as qrz.com for a website. Board type, you will need to find majority of, if you use an MMDVM board, majority of the time the board type is printed on the board itself, or it's included in the documents with the MMDVM board. Time zone, you can select what time zone you want. As with radio stuff, I always have mine set to UTC because that's what everyone uses for amateur radio to begin with, so might as well leave it there instead of setting it for local time zone. One tip, every section through the configuration menu will have a apply changes button underneath it. You must click apply changes on every section as you change it. If you go through and change the entire page and only click one of the apply changes buttons, it will only apply the changes to that section and everything else will be reset back to the default or previous setting once it reboots. So I always start at the top of the page, work my way down, and apply changes as I go. When you are setting up DMR configuration, last year in November, Brandmeister made it where you have to have a hotspot security password in order to access their system. That went into effect, I believe it was November 27th through mid-December for their three different master systems. To do that, if you don't have a Brandmeister account set up, you can go to the brandmeister.network, create an account, and under self-care, there is a section to enter a hotspot security password. The hotspot security password you enter there is the exact password you enter in the DMR configuration for your hotspot. The DMR ESSID is there. So if you are using a radio with the same DMR ID as your hotspot, if you do not have the SSID enabled, it can cause communications issues and the hotspot will not hear the radio. So they took it. It was the same way as with the APRS system, using an SSID between different base station APRS or mobile handheld. Did the same thing here to where it just adds the two digits at the end of your DMR ID number. Color code, the default is one. I generally leave it at one. The time slot, default time slot and standard time slot on all hotspots is time slot two. Those are the two set parameters you'll need to remember for programming your radio, is time slot two and the color code that you select and the frequency.
So you're saying you can't use time slot one, is that correct?
Majority of the hotspots out there are not dual monitor capable, and the default is two. There are some dual band full duplex hotspots available that you can use both time slots on, but that's completely separate. 85-90% of the hotspots out there are going to be a single channel only, and only it will go to time slot two only. Time slot one won't even be enabled.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I didn't, you know, care necessarily about both time slots. Was wondered if you could use one rather than two. But from what it sounds like, two's the default and it can't be.
Yeah, one only becomes enabled if you have a dual hat. And once you have everything programmed, you get to have fun rewriting your code plug with your hotspot frequency and talk groups that you want to use. That's why you can use the same frequency for all the channels or set a channel for every talk group that you want, and make sure you have the same color code. I've come across a lot of people that they'll start programming in for their hotspot, go to say Rocky Mountain Ham's website and pull up their Brandmeister talk group number for the different talk to get into the Northern talk group, and enter the color code and everything from Rocky Mountain Ham and wonder why they can't get into their hotspot. Well, you got to transmit the same color code and time slot that is in your hotspot, not what is on that frequency. The only external number you need is the talk group number from Brandmeister or any DMR network. You need their number to talk through their system. Your time slot and color code are dependent on your hotspot only. And we come to any questions on programming. At the end of the presentation, also, I'm planning on, I'll open up the dashboard for one of my hotspots and go through the stuff there to give people a better understanding of where to find stuff and where it is also.
Jim, I do have a question.
Yeah.
And I think I already know the answer, but we can actually hit the Northern Talk route through Brandmeister. Is that correct?
Correct. Rocky Mountain Ham has a Brandmeister link for their Northern Talk group, Central Talk group, and Southern Talk group.
Now, this frequency that you're talking about, is that from radio to hotspot?
Yes.
Okay, so that can be anything within the 70-centimeter band.
Essentially, it could be essentially anything within that. They have, I believe it was 8 frequencies that the CCARC set aside recommending people use for hotspots, which are around the 438 megahertz.
Okay.
But in general, you legally can use anything that's listed as data within the 70 centimeter 2 meter frequency. If your some hotspots are capable of VHF and UHF, so as long as you're within the data simplex frequency allocation. But I always recommend just going out, now that the CCARC has put out the frequencies to use one of the 8 that they have.
Not much chance of somebody else using it in your area.
No, I mean, they would have to have a DMR radio programmed to that frequency with the same color code and same time slot enabled. And the hotspots only put out like 5 milliwatt. And if you use the antennas or Atom, you might get 100-yard radius for signal. Now, I did do a little testing and connected it to my Diamond X200 that's 35, 40 feet in the air and was able to get about 5 miles. But then I just did that for testing just to see how good the signal was. But then I came back home and just used the little rubber duck antennas that came with the MMDVM board. And it works great for around the house and around the property and that.
Yeah, I think part of the reason with CCARC that we come up with those channels is we had people, there's part of the band with the satellite uplink.
Yeah.
Or the quiet part of the band was a piece of it. We'd had people that were putting them on an input to a repeater frequency. And being that most of these run simplex, it's not just, yeah, the hotspots are low power. But, you know, if you've got your radio that are getting into it, you know, some of them are a watt or 5 watts. So, you know, there was some potential for some interference. So that was pretty much why we had, you know, come up with some frequencies to offer some guidance with within the CCARC Council.
Yeah. I mean, once I think it was what, November, December last year when they came up with them.
We had talked about them. I think we finally finalized them and published them, I think, around December. I'd been working with the frequency coordinator along with some others on the council. And, you know, like I say, we'd mentioned it, I think, at our meeting in September or October, but we finally got it published right after Christmas because we figured there may be a few more of them coming out.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I know, once I seen them published, I start directing people to that and recommend everyone use one of them frequencies. And before that, it was make sure you're within the proper portion of the band allocation. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely good to have some guidance on what frequencies to use. Any other questions yet?
One quick question: does it do other protocols other than DMR? Like, can you do Fusion or D-Star?
Yeah, it does all kinds of 8 different modes. I think I'll show you here in a little bit all the different modes it does. Like DMR, Fusion, D-Star, P25, NXDN, and a few others. Hey, so should you buy or build? So buying a pre-built one from either Shark RF with their open spot or the SkyBridge that's available. Most of them you'll be spending anywhere from $300 to $500 to buy one pre-built if you buy one from one of the name brand ones. You can buy some of the cheaper off-brand for couple $150, $200. They're easy to set up because they generally come pre-programmed with the parameters they're able to. Obviously, they can't really pre-program it with your Wi-Fi connection or internet connection capabilities. Most companies will offer customer support. Some of the cons: higher cost, proprietary components, meaning you rely on them for repairs and service. If something breaks on it or something quits working, a lot of times you'll have to send it back in to their warranty company for any type of work if you don't want to do it yourself and void the warranty, which when you buy something, part of the reason for buying a new product is because of the warranty. If you build your own, pros are cheaper, programmed to your needs because you do all the programming and configuration yourself. A lot of community support. Get a better understanding of the equipment and the capabilities of it, and more options for adding to your hardware later down the road if you want to add on to it or make it capable of something else. Some of the cons: steeper learning curve, once again, because you are doing the programming and all the configuration yourself, and a little bit more work to get them set up. in my opinion. More work to set it up means it's going to work better in the end instead of just buying something and hoping it works. This is one of the ones that I use that I've been testing for portable use, connecting through my phone internet service or data plan to use it out on the road, out camping, remote areas. As long as I have data service on my phone, I can have DMR anywhere I go without having to worry about being within range of a repeater. The cost on mine is, well, the Raspberry Pi for the Pi 3B Plus was $41.99. I do use the full duplex dual time slot board, which is $70 to buy. I connected it with a Maker Focus Raspberry Pi board, which is $22. That enables me to plug it directly into any 12 volt power source, whether it's a battery, power supply, anything I use, it uses the same power as my radio does. So I can just connect it to a 12 volt battery and it's good to go. The Raspberry Pi and the MMDVM board require 5 volt power. So having that on there, it has the built-in buck converter to convert everything down to 5 volt, 4 amp output for the Raspberry Pi and MMDVM board.
So since you're using the Raspberry Pi, can you, for the Wi-Fi connectivity, can you use either 5 gig Wi-Fi or the 2 gig Wi-Fi? I know most of the units that are out there now are all 2 gig, but is that should be a function of the Raspberry Pi board, correct?
Correct. With the Raspberry Pi 3, depending, I know like some of the older ones, if it's just the 3 or 3B, were 2.4 gig only. The B Plus went to 2.4 and 5 gig Wi-Fi connection. So yes, you can use the 2.4 or 5 gig internet connection with that one.
Thanks.
I know now that they have the Raspberry Pi 4s out, which are significantly better and run a lot smoother. There's some configuration issues to use the MMDVM board with the Pi 4, which are gradually getting worked through with the programming and configuration. I actually have one that I've been playing around with the programming on to try and get it to work reliably. It's almost there, but not quite, which will be a big game changer because you can get, like I said, the Pi 4s are available in an 8 gigabyte memory version and a lot faster and a lot more reliable. Which brings me to, I also have on mine a Raspberry Pi 4 that I use for logging software and other stuff that you're capable of running with radios, whether it's FT8, WinLink, everything else I can run on the other board. Total cost for everything that I use is under $250, which is still cheaper than going out and buying a pre-built one. And it's a lot more capable and can do a lot more things. So once there are people playing around with using a Pi 4 with a bigger hard drive attached with a SSD hard drive for booting and everything, that they're almost able to partition the hard drive to where they can use one board for multiple applications and run the hotspot on one partition and still be able to open the other partition for everything else. Any questions before I open up the dashboard for my hotspot? You can see here, once you get, this is, let me make that full screen just a little bit easier. When you first log in, obviously I've been logged in, so the password and everything has already been entered. The first time you log in, you'll have to enter the username and password. Like I said, the default is Pi*, Pi-*, all lowercase, and the default password is Raspberry. That's RASPBERRY, all lowercase also. They are case sensitive, so make sure you just use lowercase on everything for the default password and username. When you first log in, you'll first come to this screen. Not much on here to see other than if it's set up. If you go to the configuration, you'll see that we'll list the different modes that it's capable of. For the host configuration, the general configuration in the center of the screen, you'll see the host name, PyStar. You enter your call sign, your DMR ID. Do not enter any SSID or anything additional besides your 6 to 7 digit DMR ID number. Latitude, longitude, town, country, different type, whatever your modem type is. The radio modem type is that your hotspot, whether it's an MMDVM board or OpenSpot, DV Mega boards. You can see all the different types of boards that they have. Node type, public, private, which default is private, I believe. I'm not 100% positive, but I believe that was something to do with the hotspots being used in the EU. They required it there because of their laws, and it makes no difference here whether it's public or private. I said at the end of each section, you can see that there is an apply changes button. Now, if I was to change something here and hit the apply changes button here, it would not apply the changes from the general configuration. You have to hit the apply changes at the bottom of each section. DMR color code, everything set in this section. You can, if you have a GPS capable, you can enable GPS configuration and everything else. I don't use it because GPS through digital modes isn't very reliable and not, in some cases, not legal to use, because if you transmit over RF, you must also transmit your call sign, which not many programs do. Firewall configuration, I recommend leaving everything to private unless you're planning on, if you need to connect to it remotely, then you can obviously switch it to public. But everything I use is private on my network. And if I need to, I can log into my network and access it directly from the network remotely. You can see I have mine. This one is connected through Ethernet, so the interface, the wireless configuration shows interfaces down because it's not connected through Wi-Fi. You can configure multiple Wi-Fi connections, which the one I use, portable, will connect to. It will give you a list of how many different ones you have connected. It connects in order that they're listed. So if I have my home Wi-Fi connection listed first, and then I use the hotspot or Wi-Fi connection through my data plan on my cell phone, and that is listed second, whichever one is listed first, it'll connect to. So if I take that hotspot out in my truck and drive down the road and lose my home Wi-Fi, it'll automatically connect to my phone Wi-Fi. And so on. If there are people that have 4 or 5 different Wi-Fis connected, whether it's at their cabin out in the mountains, and then their vehicle, and then their home, and different areas. Another tip, never hit the factory reset button in the PyStar menu. If you hit the factory reset button, and if you have a LCD display configured with the MMDVM board, it erases all of the needed drivers for that, and you will spend a day and a half, 2 days getting all the drivers set back up, because it all has to be done through command line SSH connection. Not very fun unless you're very experienced to do command line installation of software. The update button, you can click update and it'll update all the drivers and everything. all the settings. I generally try and do that at least once a week. You can see it. You just clicked up update and it goes through and does all of the updates automatically, which this one should go fairly quick because it was just updated yesterday. It says starting file updates complete, sleeping for a few seconds before making disk read only, and it is finished.
And this doesn't change anything that you've inputted, correct?
No, it does not change anything. It just updates all the binary files and host files and that. All your configuration remains the same. I know, like right now, the PyStar software is at version 4.1.4. The operating system, it's the same as if you like update your Windows operating system or Mac operating system, but updates everything that runs in the background that makes it capable for security and ease of use and that. A lot of people will just use the dashboard to see what is running in that and the status. I generally like to use, if you go to the admin section, shows the complete dashboard, but it also shows the CPU temp, CPU load and everything. So you can see if something's being overloaded, gives you a little bit more information, but shows everything the same. You can run multiple different settings. Like I can run DMR and Fusion, the Yaesu System Fusion at the exact same time. And it will, but it can create crosstalk, and I have seen it and had it happen once to where the transmit got froze on open. So it was just kept bouncing back and forth. So I recommend only running one system at a time. If you can see, it does do DMR, DSTAR, Fusion, P25, NXDN. You can do Fusion to DMR, meaning you can use a Fusion radio and cross mode into DMR. You can also do Fusion to NXDN, Fusion to P25, DMR to Fusion, DMR to P25, the POXEG paging features. Haven't played with that one yet, so I'm not too familiar with that is.
So in order to do that, Jim, you're going to have one of these click. It just doesn't automatically go from DMR to Fusion, correct?
Correct. Most of the time, like I'll use, turn on Fusion because I can show it without using the radio. DMR, whenever you have it set, whenever you whatever channel you have programmed in your radio and transmitted, it'll automatically change the talk group for you. So say I'm talking on the northern talk group with my radio, and then all of a sudden I want to go to one of the TAC channel, like the TAC 319 channel on DMR. I just switched the channel to that and key it up, and it automatically switches the hotspot to that talk group. Like I said, see, I changed the Fusion from DMR, click apply changes. It'll take a second to switch it over. Now that it's over, if I go over to the dashboard or admin function, you can see that it has Yaesu YSF Link Manager. I can click the drop-down menu and select any of the hundreds of talk groups that Fusion has. Or go to North America, click request change, it'll link to that talk group.
I'm curious about the quality of the sound. Fusion actually sounds better than DMR. If you had a radio that was doing DMR and you transmitted on Fusion, Does it make it any better or not?
No, it will be this exact same, because your hotspot will be receiving the DMR and doing the cross mode transfer to put it into the Fusion mode to transmit, go over the internet.
Okay.
And vice versa. If you use a Fusion radio, your hotspot's going to receive that and convert it to DMR.
And then that would sound actually better than DMR, right?
It would sound the same. It's going to sound the same either way. It'll sound like DMR because that's what's being actually transmitted and received on the other end.
Okay. Okay. But as far as going the other way, if you're transmitting on DMR to Fusion, it stays DMR.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And you see right now it's showing that, I'm on the Fusion Worldwide. This guy just transmitted DO1 ULI, transmitted 8 seconds, no loss, no bit error rate. And so you can see that came over the net. And guys, transmitting again. And whenever I transmit through my hotspot, it'll show up RF is the source instead of net. Let me see if I have. And of course, that radio's dead. So, let me go back to configure. Now, if I want to go back to DMR, okay, so I can. Now that I have this connected, I can go to this on my cell phone to log into the configuration menu also. And now I'm back in DMR mode. If I go to the dashboard or admin, it still show up gateway activity because the gateway actually received that. It shows my Brandmeister. The master that it's on is the 3101 repeater ID, static talk groups, dynamic talk groups. Now I have my DMR HT to transmit on the hotspot or the DMR through to the Northern Talk group for Rocky Mountain Ham. K6 ETE testing. You can see it came up right there. Call sign time, DMR time slot 2, target. For some reason, it's showing a call sign there instead of the talk group, but it's going through the talk group 4721 North. Source is RF, loss 0, bit error rate 0.7%, which is probably because I'm only about 2 feet away from it. So it's probably overloading the front end a little bit. And now if I take my radio and switch to central talk group, going through the hotspot, K6 ETE testing. Shows up there. Now let me go. Look in here, and then I can go down to my hotspots. This will be where you get for your to set up an account, if you go to, once you set it up, if you click on your username at the top, go to self-care. Right here is where you enter your security password, your hotspot security. Enter it there. Make sure that's turned on. And then that'll be what you use on your hotspot. Now, if I go down here to my hotspot, it'll show information for the hotspot and everything else. Click on call sign. Show your different hotspots. Tell you how many. Last time you were heard, duration, talk group that you were talking into, signal going into the internet. And everything right there. So a lot of tools to use for a lot of different information. Anyone have any questions?
So, Jim, you said this could be used for analog as well?
No, you can configure stuff to where it'll receive. Some of them you can receive an analog signal and it'll convert it, but it can't be used for analog communication between like radio to radio or any type of repeater stuff.
So the radio that you're using to talk to the hotspot has to have the digital mode capabilities. Is that true?
For 99% of the stuff, yes. But what you can do is, because say like if I know a lot of people have, like if you have the Yaesu radio that has digital capability, their YSF capabilities, you can do the YSF to DMR. So you can use a Fusion radio to talk over DMR talk groups and vice versa. If you have a cheap DMR radio, you can use that to talk over Fusion talk groups.
Okay.
Some of the other stuff they are playing around with using, being able to use an analog radio and have the hotspot that'll receive it, convert it to digital. But for the most part, anything that's reliable, you'll need some type of digital input to get digital output. It'll cross mode it between the different digitals once it's received, but it wants a digital, some type of digital input.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions?
So I've got a Yaesu 100D here, which I've had for a long time. It's C4 FM capable for sure. Set up a hotspot downstairs, plug it into Ethernet, and basically I can talk DMR, correct?
Correct.
And there's no, other than I'd have to click the saying that I'm talking on fusing, that I'm basically going into DMR. That has to be checked as far as into your programming, right?
Correct. You would have to enable the YSF to DMR in the hotspot. And then it'll take the YSF signal and convert it to DMR and transmit and send that over the internet connection.
The software come with it? Is this a free software? I mean,
it's all Linux, but Linux systems. It's all open source software, so it's all free. The only cost you have is buying the hotspot, whether it's you build one or buy one pre-built. I like building them because it's cheaper and I can add to it. Like with mine, I have mine set up to where I can use the one for digital modes on HF and VHF, and set up also is a DMR hotspot.
but you'd have to, you're programming the hotspot. You're not necessarily programming through your computer to the hotspot, correct?
Correct. Whenever you, the hotspot, let me, this turned off. Let me shut this one down and
That would be a hardware connection, not necessarily a Wi-Fi connection, correct?
Well, you can use Wi-Fi connection or hardline Ethernet connection. This is a Raspberry Pi 4, the size of it, which the hotspot connects right to the top of it. Like the MMDVM board just plugs right in. The memory card, or not really a memory card, but what the hard drive is to store the program is a little micro SD card.
Oh, okay.
And so this is a single board computer. There's not much you can't do with them. I mean, you can go online, write code, program stuff, watch YouTube. It's a all out computer. That's why on mine, on the one I have, is set up with, and I can't bring it over far enough, but it's set up with two different Raspberry Pis, one that I use for the hotspot, one that I use for logging software and digital modes. I'm in the process of getting it set up for digital modes where I can do WinLink, FT8, FT4, Whisper, all the different digital modes on an HF radio, or even VHF, do the VHF packet and that with it also, and have hotspot all in one little configuration that's not much bigger than that. So when I'm out in my camper, I just take the one, connect the HDMI output on it to the TV monitor that I already have in my camper, and I have a full computer set up for any digital mode that I want. It all runs on 12 volt. And it cost me $250 versus spending $350 just for a hotspot.
Well, I noticed that on your list of materials, you had two Raspberry Pis on there. Did you use both of them?
The one right now, because of the trying to figure out the configuration to use one single Raspberry Pi to do everything simultaneously, is a little bit of a headache and not reliable yet. I have two Raspberry Pis on there, one that is dedicated to a hotspot and one that is dedicated for all the other digital modes.
Oh, okay. So you actually are using both
of them. Yeah. I mean, so the one that I use for portable right now is twice that size of a square, but it's twice as thick. So it's 2 inches thick instead of one. I mean, this is pretty much the size of a credit card, but an inch thick.
Interesting.
They're fun to play with and different things, and inexpensive to play with. I mean, like the Raspberry Pi 3B Plus is $45. The Raspberry Pi 4, the one that I have, was $110 because it's got the 8 gig RAM versus a 2 gig RAM, and it's got a 4-core processor versus a single core processor. I mean, so with the one with the Pi 4, you can watch a high definition video without issue, where with the Pi 3, you're limited to only watching up to, I think it's a 480 or 720 quality video for reference.
Okay.
can definitely see a new project coming up.
All right, and this is, that's the one I use that has everything on it. You can see the two antennas, the upper parts, the Raspberry Pi, or the hotspot, and the lower one's the Raspberry Pi 4. And that'll do everything for me. I said, total cost for this to do everything, $250 versus $300 just for something that does one thing.
You did mention that there are cheaper ones, but you didn't condemn them. I'm curious about.
No, the cheaper ones are, they, with everything else, you pay what you get for. A lot of the cheaper ones will only do three different modes. Like the cheaper one will only do DMR, Fusion, and D-Star. It won't do the cross mode between them or stuff like that. But if it's cost effectiveness, if someone just wanted something to use for DMR only, you can pick one up for, have one complete to build yourself between like a Raspberry Pi Zero, which is around $20, and a $25 board for it for the hotspot to do DMR only, which will give you the same capability, but it's limited on what it can do. So $50, you can build one. I'm just the type, if I build something, I want to build it for multiple uses and multiple items in one package.
Yeah, I understand that. Then you don't have to buy it again.
Yeah. And with having it, two, I look at having two Raspberry Pi boards. If something happens to the one, hardware-wise, I can take the SD, the micro SD card out of one, put it in the other one, and it's already programmed and works. Hmm. Well, it's essentially having a backup.
Very good. Any other questions for Jim? Come on, this is interesting.
Lisa, I know Darren has the file for the presentation, the PowerPoint portion of the presentation, which he'll probably be uploading onto the website, so that'll be available for people too.
Yeah, I was going to do that, but when we were recording it, I was going to wait until we got the video so we could actually throw that up there too. So
yeah, I know we'll have that video up there, and I know this is on YouTube also, so it's up there. So
any other questions for Jim?
Jim, one thing I might throw in, this is Ron. I put together my duplex hotspot a couple of weeks ago. And one thing I did, rather than set it up for Wi-Fi, I just set it next to my router and ran a cable and set it up by cable. And that seems to just eliminate a lot of potential headaches with Wi-Fi. I mean, it immediately connected to the internet, and I haven't even rebooted it since I set it up. So if you can hardwire it, it just removes that one complexity.
Yeah. I mean, that I do the same thing. If mine, like I have one sitting here on my desk that's hardwired and through Ethernet connection, I don't use Wi-Fi on that just because of that. If I'm able to connect something directly, I'll connect it directly.
Yeah.
But I have a second one that I use Wi-Fi on for portable use.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to mention, I think you use the same ones, but for people that are going to grow their own, the cases that are made by C4 Labs, it's not worth even looking at anything else as far as I'm concerned.
That one, this one right here.
I saw you had the same one. Yeah, they're just so nice. They go together so well. They're really nice cases.
Yeah, well, I actually bought some, not plexiglass, the acrylic, and I have a laser cutter now. So I'm going to making my own to where I can, it'll be cheaper and I can custom make it to fit what I, everything that I have. You can see with this one has parts of the acrylic C4 case, but I want something to fully enclose it, which for a dual board and everything else, they don't really make anything. So.
Yeah, nice.
Any other questions for Jim? I have a question for you, but it's actually on another subject, so stick around for a minute if you don't mind afterwards. Has to do with the FT-70s.
Yeah.
So. Anything else? Well, guys and gals, I thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate this. Next month, I finally think I've talked James into doing his battery presentation, which he did, for Aries, I'm guessing 8 years ago, maybe, when we were over at the firehouse there where you're at, Mike, over at Windsor. Excellent presentation. And now he's coming back going to tell me, no, you didn't. So anyway, he's going to be, go ahead.
Just to add to that, Joe, it's updated, much updated now with all the lithium chemistries and things. So it's focuses on both lead acid and lithium batteries.
Looking forward to it. Do remember, if you guys want to see a presentation, something, I'd send me a note at president@ncard.net. We will get it out there. I am amazed at the people that we have in this club that want to do presentations and that know what they're dealing with much more than I do. So I thank you very much for that.
Hey, Joe.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to take just a very quick minute. I happened to notice in QST, I think this month, that Mr. David O'Farrell, WB0IXV, is listed as a recent recipient of the ARRL's recognition of high-speed CW. So congratulations to Dave for that.
Thank you. You have to read the fine print. I don't know if everyone looks at that. They always report all of the different contest winners that go over three pages of four columns of tiny print of call signs. So you must spend a lot of time reading if you're looking for call signs. But thank you for the compliment.
Actually, it was highlighted in a half page ad this month. So, yeah, congratulations. 25 words a minute to for Dave there. So I just want
to. Yeah, but you only have to get 1 minute. It's not all 7 minutes or whatever they send during their W1AW runs. You just have to get 1 minute.
1 minute at 25 words a minute is a very respectable achievement. So congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. It's about as fast as I can write. I don't think I can go faster.
Well, David, I'm waiting for when they give an award for one word every 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, maybe NCARC could start that award. It could be a beautiful plaque. With the money I hear you guys have, it shouldn't be a problem getting you a nice gold plaque.
And only three letters.
So just send you your call sign till you copy it correctly.
Oh, that's too much. That's too much.
SOS.
Yeah.
I tell you, I've been working on that. James gave me a little thing years ago, and I'm still working on the dang thing. So I'm not very smart.
Well, it's one of those things you have to get into your subconscious. It's just like a lot of times you hear the first couple notes of a song on the radio, and you know exactly what the song is. And I know you didn't set out to memorize those, and it's sort of the same thing. It just takes a fair amount of time, and they say, you know, lots of short sessions are better than saying you're going to spend all day tomorrow and learn the code. That's not going to work. So,
well, I've played in bands for almost 30 to 40 years, and everybody says, well, you got the rhythm. I mean, you know that. And if you talk to any one of the band members' wives, they say they'll never dance with them because we have no rhythm. That's a fact. That is a fact. Yeah, now, we're going to dance with you. You got no. I'm looking at the drummer thinking, he has no rhythm.
but again, you probably played many pieces so many times, you don't need to look at the sheet music at all to do it. But you never set out to actually memorize it that way. You could probably even write the notes on, you know, a blank set of sheet music for whatever instrument you play.
We have never used sheet music. In the 20 to 30 years, because back, I mean, we're doing at that time, we were doing top 40. You had to have the record. So you just kind of put it down on the thing and listen to the word, wrote them down. Really, I've never used sheet music.
Okay. Well, you've got perfect pitch then.
No, the thing of it is, we work in bars. They don't care.
So, not after 8 p.m.
No, 6 p.m. No, in fact, I had somebody ask me that. Well, what kind of sheet music? We've never used sheet music. Just kind of remember to play it and pick it up from there. So,
yeah. But keep poking away at it. You'll acquire it. If you're able to do that with music, you'll be able to acquire the code. And you don't have to be 25 words a minute. You know, mostly in QSOs, I just poke along at 13, 15 words a minute is fine. You don't have to. I'm not a contester. Those guys, I think they just use computer to computer mostly, sending and receiving the code. But I just, you know, it's kind of one of these things. That's what I grew up with. I was licensed in the mid-60s as a novice, and so I've just kind of always kept it.
I think it's a good idea. I think everybody should at least take a look at it. But I really struggle with it, and I don't know why I don't struggle. I'm back to, you know, like the phase one. I mean, if you give it up for, you know, like 6 weeks, you're better go off going back. I'm not the bright one like the rest of these guys.
Yeah, but you've got experience like most of us.
I have that. I can find it. Anything else we could have fun with tonight or today? Well, thanks so much, folks. Appreciate you all stopping by. And hopefully when we get out of this COVID situation and everybody gets their shots, we'll start having rosin core projects. In fact, we've got a couple ideas for some excellent rosin core projects. If you're not familiar with what rosin core is, this is a hands-on type group that we actually are going to work with the city through the city of Fort Collins when they open up. And we'll basically go in there and we'll help you build a kit. We'll have some experts online showing you maybe mostly through hole projects and things like that. So be more than happy to have you stop by and do that. And we will let you know when our ham lit class goes for the new folks that are here. And you don't have to be new. I mean, we've had some people with extras actually stop by and listen in. So thank you very much and good night.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, James. Goodbye.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Joe.
Go ahead, Ann. Oh, she dropped out. Hey,
here.
Jim.
I'm here. I'm still here.
Oh, did you have something?
No, I just said goodbye and thanks for everything.
Oh, you bet.
Okay. Cheers.
Hey, Joe.
Yes.
Did you ever get your January CQ?
I have not got it yet.
Oh, weird.
I mean, I think March is QST, but I have got nothing. And I looked yesterday. I haven't looked today yet, but I've got nothing.
All right.
And James said he hadn't got his either. So I'm not sure when it's going to be. Hey, Jim, I got a question about the FT-70, and, of course, this relates to the FT-2 also.
Yeah.
I understand there's a USB cable that comes with it. Is that a programming cable?
Mine didn't come with a cable.
Well, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just a plug-in to charge it or if it's something else, but it says it's coming with a USB cable, but they don't tell me what cable it is. That's all they say, USB cable.
Yeah, I mean, could be either one. I don't think they charge USB charge.
Yeah, I haven't dropped off yet. You're talking about the Yaesu FT-70?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have one, and it came with a specific cable, and that's what I used to program it with.
It did come with a cable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I know I'm looking at two different ones. I'm looking at the FT3 and I'm looking at the 70. And they both
come
with USB cables, but they are, I mean, using Chirp or something like that, you can program it?
Yeah.
I wouldn't use Chirp. Either Yaesu has their own software.
Oh, do they?
Or get the RT systems.
Yeah, the RT.
I can't remember, actually, I programmed it. Aaron helped me set it up. We had a programming session once at the library.
Yeah.
Gosh, a couple of years. Yep. And I did it then using that specific cable.
Yeah, but he uses Chirp.
I think I did use Chirp.
Because I've got the RT system stuff and he pushes that on to me and then he does all the Chirp stuff. So that would have been Chirp that he used.
Yeah. But I think I actually downloaded the RT because I brought my computer with me. And I think I downloaded the RT system, actually.
You used the RT systems with the cable that came?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That surprises me it would work.
I've always used, if the radio comes with it, I know even for like the FTM-400 and my Kenwood and everything else, I use the supplied cable.
Yeah. And I remember reading something about the supplied cable is kind of important to use versus just any cable.
Yeah. Well, I know with RT systems, if you get it, just the program alone is $25 or $30. If you need the cable, then it's like $45 or $50.
Yeah. And I've dealt with those guys, with Karen and that bunch a lot, and I've got a lot of their stuff and I like it. I'm just trying to be a little bit less expensive, if you will, for the new stuff.
Well, if you get the FT70, I have the programming software for that, the RT systems.
Oh, okay. Well, for $25, I can buy it too. So
yeah. My FT70 and FT2 didn't come with the cable. I had to buy the cable separate.
Huh.
I got them whenever the radios first came out. I think it might have been within the past year or two that Yaesu finally started including it with their radios.
Maybe it's the difference between the D and the DR.
I have a D.
You've got a D?
I think at the time that they started doing the 400, they started including the cables.
Yeah.
Well, the 400 always had it. You're right, Dave. So maybe that's what they did.
Yeah, around that time, like they've been coming with cable since then.
Yeah, I know my 400 came with the cable and one of my other radios, Yaesu radios, but like my FT70 didn't come with the cable. My FT2 didn't come with the cable. But
my 70D did come with the cable.
And the 2 didn't?
No.
Wow. That's somewhat of a new radio. I mean, it's 2-3 years old.
4 or 5 years.
Oh, it is that long? Okay. Yeah. Well, I think from what I understand, the 3 was kind of an offshoot of the 400.
Yeah, well, because a lot of people, the big difference is they moved the GPS antenna on the FT3 to the top of the radio and kind of have it to where it sticks out a little bit. To where in the FT2, it's buried on the circuit board in the radio. So they put that in a better location, and they put the color display on it so it's easier to see because of the contrast levels are the big changes.
Well, the 2's not a touch display, is it?
Yeah, the 2's a touch display.
Oh, it is? I guess I didn't know that. Okay.
Yep, the 2's the touch display. The 3 has the color screen. They basically took the screen from the FT300 or FTM-300 that they came out with and shrunk it down to put it on an HT.
I better stop the recordings.